something happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear.
This is Kate Magruder for Promise of Paradise, Back to the Land Oral Histories of Mendocino County. Today we'll be hearing from Lynn Meadows of Ukiah. Lynn and her husband, Bob Dress, have lived in the intentional community of Greenfield Ranch since 1972. Shortly after settling there, Lynn became part of the movement for home birth, which was rising up throughout the United States. She began her work as a lay midwife. During the next 25 years, she figures she helped with more than 600 births all across the county. She became a physician's assistant and worked in the ER for 20 years. Her focus now is on palliative care, helping local folks with serious illness who are in the last few years of their life. She spoke with us about her calling as a midwife to both birth and death in our county, and what drew her to the mysteries and majesty of the work and coming back to the land.
Well, I remember when I was 12 years old that I was at my mother's friend's house, and she had the book, The Family of Man. And there's a picture in there of a baby being born, a doctor holding it upside down. And I saw that picture at that house, and I stared at it, and I just thought, I want to be there. I want to do that. I'm going to be an obstetrician. So I made my mind up when I was 12 that I wanted to become an obstetrician. Well, my father died when I was 8 suddenly, and I was raised by my mom. And it was a pretty hard childhood, and I ended up in foster homes and emancipated as a minor. And so I was so traumatized by my childhood that by the time I got to college, it was hard for women to break into sciences, and the competition was really rough. And I'd been so traumatized that I made the choice that I couldn't do it. I couldn't make it by myself. And so I majored in sociology and social welfare because I wanted to be a probation officer, because I'd had some good ones and bad ones in my life. So that was my first major in college, and I kind of gave up that dream about going to medical school. But I did marry Bob when I was 19, and that was a good turn in my life, and we came here together. But then the movement for home birth in the early 70s was really rising up at that point. And I knew that's my calling. When I was 12, I didn't know there was such a thing as a midwife. And so I became a lay midwife and started studying and started working throughout the county doing home births and meeting people all over the place on back roads. And there was a lot of support for that. And I got involved in the medical community, and there was underground support for me to do that work. And there were some physicians in town that supported that. And it was very political in the state of California. At that time, it was not legal, lay midwifery. But we fought a battle throughout the state, and now it is legal. And I made the decision at that time to go to school, and that was actually in 1980 that I went to Stanford and became a PA, and then I became a PA midwife after that. That was my journey. But I did spend 20 years going into the back hills of Mendocino County doing births with women, and I always say the mother delivers the baby, all over the place, in buses, in cabins, in beautiful houses out in the middle of nowhere, out roads in the middle of snowstorms. And it was an amazing spiritual experience, and it's got me connected, and it's part of the work I do now too.
Is there a home birth in particular that you helped with that stands out for you?
I would have to say any of them could stand out if I talked to the mother and the child and the father and the family. I do think of one that lasted 4 days with a woman who was living on her ranch outside of Willits. And she had a huge garden and lots of goats and animals that she took care of. And she was a very strong farm woman and very determined, and absolutely did not want to go to the hospital, out of the question. And so she had a very slow, long labor and a very large baby. And about 2.5 days into it, I felt like, you know, we really need help. We need to go. And oh no, we're not doing that. Anyway, she stuck with it. She stayed with it, and the baby stayed okay throughout. And we stayed with her throughout. And eventually that baby was born at home and everything was fine. But that was about the longest labor that I ever was part of. And but she was a really determined farm woman.
Have you had the experience of helping at a birth of a child and then helping at the birth of that child's child?
The thing is that I worked as a midwife for about 25 years, and then I retired from midwifery, and I worked in the ER and the hospital, and so I changed. The people that I helped have their babies, now the babies are in their 40s, and they're having babies. And of course, my own daughters have babies. They always want me to be with them. I do have some friends that have asked me to come and be a doula for them, but I don't work as a midwife anymore. Now I do end-of-life care. I do palliative care, and I was calling someone who was referred to me, and I was describing, I talked to him on the phone, and I said, my name is Lynn Meadows, and I would like to make an appointment to see you. I got this referral, and he goes, I know who you are. You helped my baby be born 40 years ago, and I want to see you, you know. So what goes around comes around. It's like the beginning of life and toward the end of life, and it's beautiful.
Tell me just a tiny bit about palliative care, what that means. What does that mean?
Palliative care is the newest medical specialty, and we take care of people that have serious illness who are still getting treatment and are the last few years of their life. And they sometimes get well and graduate from our service. And right now it's a community-based service because they find that people who get our support, and we had some multidisciplinary team of chaplains, social worker, and nurses, doctors, PAs, and we support the person in their home and treat their symptoms of all kinds, social, spiritual, physical, and we do miracles. We think out of the box. We get them on their bucket list and things like that, and they find that people live longer, have a better quality of life, and it costs less because they get what they need from us, and it's very rewarding. Yes, I love it.
I asked Lynn why and when she came to Mendocino County.
I came to Mendocino County for the first time in probably 1971, and I moved here in 1972. And the reason I came is that I had a vision to live in a meadow when I was younger, and we found a meadow that we could afford to buy in Northern California. I grew up in San Diego, and I always yearned for seasons. I felt like there was no change in the season there. And I wanted to live where there was a change in the seasons, where there was rain and wind and cold. And so I looked to the Northern California, and we traveled up here. And I was inspired by Joan Baez during the Vietnam War, because there was a documentary out about her, and I went to see it. And she lived in Central California at the time on a ranch that she owned, and they showed her walking through this meadow, and I thought, I want to walk through a meadow and have it be my meadow.
Were you Lynn Meadows before you married Bob Dress, or did you change your name?
I changed my name. I was Lynn Anderson, and Bob is Bob Dress, and I just had this thing about the meadow, you know, it was my vision for myself. So I changed my name. I did some research, and you can make your name whatever you want as long as you always tell all your names. So I'm Lynn Dress Meadows legally now, but I go by Lynn Meadows. Yeah. And I'm living my truth.
The meadow that Lynn found in Northern California was on Greenfield Ranch, about 10 miles northwest of Ukiah. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Promise of Paradise, Back to the Land, Oral Histories of Mendocino County. We're hearing from Lynn Meadows from Ukiah. I'm Kate Magruder. The idea for Greenfield Ranch sprang from the imagination and will of a young man named Tim Baker from Berkeley. Tim had a vision of creating an intentional community that was a hybrid of commune and subdivision. He put the word out into the universe that he was looking for people who were interested in moving to the hills of Mendocino County.
This man had this vision of making a community there. At the time, it was a 5,000-acre ranch, and the person who had it couldn't afford the taxes, so he had it up for sale. And a lot of ranches were for sale at the time. And Tim was able to convince the owner that if he would give him 2 years, that he could find the people and pay him cash. So we heard this little postcard came out, and it said, "Well, I'm starting a community up in Northern California. Meet with Tim Baker in Berkeley, and he'll take you up there." Well, Tim had already divided up a ranch in Sonoma County, and he had realized he failed certain aspects of creating that community. He didn't make any common land, and so he wanted to try again. He was determined to start an intentional community. And so one of the people that was part of that community in Sonoma County was a friend of a friend, and they sent out a newsletter, and it said, "Oh, by the way, I have this place up in Mendocino County that I'm going to divide up. We come to a meeting, you know." So that's how we heard about it. And so Bob and I came up, and we went to Berkeley, to this loft in Berkeley, and he showed us this map, and we were with a friend who really wanted to do agriculture, so we wanted water on the property. And so we drove our old truck up to the gate of Greenfield. It was in the middle of the winter. And I was not a physically active girl. My shoes were very smooth on the bottom. And we had to hike 5 miles in on the dirt road with the snow. There was snow on the ground. And it was the hardest thing I ever did in my life. And it was a piece of property with a very deep canyon on it with a creek in the bottom, and that's where the water source was. And so we climbed down into that creek, and we fell in love with it. There were icicles hanging off the trees, and it was so beautiful. But the problem was I was so weak that climbing back up out of the canyon, I kept falling down, and I told Bob I was just going to die there and go on without me. And so somehow he managed to help me get out of the canyon, and we hiked back. And I remember there were big cows that were part of the property, and we came around a corner, and there were some cows, and it was really scary. I thought they were going to kill us or something. They were just looking at us, and somehow we made it out of there. So that was my first experience of Greenfield and of Northern California.
And what did you do when you got here, when you finally moved here? How did you live physically? How did you make it work?
Well, in the beginning, I came before Bob did because he was finishing up some school and work. And we had at Greenfield, there's 500 acres of common land, and there's a ranch house. And so a lot of people landed at the ranch house, and that's where we stayed in the beginning. And we would go up to our property and start developing it somehow. But the first winter, we stayed at the ranch house and prepared for the spring to come. And that's when Bob came, and we started staying on our property, and nothing was developed there. So we had to do start from scratch.
How did you know how to do stuff from scratch?
Well, I always tell people, be careful who you pick to marry, because Bob had a degree in industrial arts, and he was into building domes while he was in college, and so he basically could do anything, and he did. So there, pick the right person.
How did you manage the water when it was at the bottom of the canyon?
We had a spring up at the top, and it was maybe 40 feet in elevation or 50 feet in elevation down from the top. And in the beginning, we camped out near there, and it was on the edge of a cliff because this is a very steep canyon that we bought. And we would hike down to the spring and come back with buckets of water. And that's how we started with our water system, carrying it.
And tell me about the roads in those early years and what it was like to try to get into town for basic needs.
In the beginning, it was quite rustic, and we had no money because we were college students. And when we bought the land, the cost of our land was $12,000 for 110 acres. And we didn't have any money, so we got 14 people to put in $1,000 each. And so we had 14 partners. And then Bob and I saved money for a couple of years. So we saved $1,700 that we came with. And we lived off the $1,700 and built our house for 2 years. And our house cost about $150 because we just had to buy nails and tar paper. And the rest we tore down an old house that someone advertised that we could tear down. That's where we got the wood. And then Bob would cut down trees and we would skin them. And he built a pole house in the beginning. And we used rocks to make the floor. And we didn't have a car. But somebody on the ranch was able to get a $50 car from the dump, or not the dump, what is it called when the cars go, the dead cars go? You know, the junkyard. And so we had this car, it had no back seat on it, but we shared it. We all went in on it for $50 and we parked it by the gate, which was 5 miles away. And so twice a month, Bob and I would hike out to the car and go to town. The stupidest thing would be we would take our laundry in. And so we had these backpacks with our laundry and we would go to town and we had food commodities at the time. So we'd go pick up our food commodities and whatever food we could afford to get, which I remember the most valuable food was a bottle of wine and some chocolate chips that we would have in this backpack. And then, you know, we would go to town in this car, then come back and park it at the gate because the roads weren't good enough to drive on in the wintertime. You couldn't make it. So we would hike back to our house and unpack very carefully everything. And I remember taking out the bottle of wine and putting it on the table and just like worshiping it and the bag of chocolate chips, you know, that would have to last for weeks. And we would settle in because in this first year, we had built this tiny little cabin, which wasn't finished, but it had a wood stove so we could stay warm and food. I think we took in a bag of beans in the beginning too when we could still. So we had beans. And another cool thing was that you had to walk everywhere. And so the ranch house is probably about 3 miles from our house. And our nearest neighbor was probably 2 miles away. And so we wouldn't really know when someone was coming over. There weren't any cell phones or anything. And so people would just show up, and of course, if they came, then they would stay a day or two. And one time, we remember Kathy Jones coming up with Dennis Patton, and they were coming up from the canyon, and there was snow, but they came running up because they had heard a bear in the canyon, and it roared really loud, and it scared them, and they took off running up the hill, and they came and stayed a few days. So that's how we made it through the first winter. And then we would go down to the ranch house and everyone would gather and tell all their stories. There were people living in plastic houses and we were all young. I mean, I was a teenager. I was 20 by the time we lived there. And so we made it through the first year. It was really fun. We had great parties at the ranch house on Thanksgiving. And
what would you do at a party like that?
So when we had parties at the ranch house or anywhere, people would bring their musical instruments and their whatever food they had. And there was a lot of talking about building and being cold or wet or raccoons coming in your house or, you know, us against nature kind of. A lot of music, a lot of singing, dancing, keeping warm by the fire, eating food.
As you look back on especially those early years of when you moved here, what were some of the biggest challenges that you faced?
It was a challenge to build our house. It was a challenge to put in our water system. It was a challenge to build our first garden and grow our own food and learn how to take care of our goats and animals. Sometimes when I think of a challenge, though, I think how it was hard or negative or painful. And there's no pain that I can think of. It was really fun. It was exciting. The hardest thing for me, the most painful part of it, to tell you the truth, was I was from San Diego, and Southern California is more uptight than like Berkeley. And so there was a lot of people on the ranch that were from Berkeley, and they were Northern California indoctrinated already, and I wasn't. And so one time we got stuck in the mud really bad by the ranch house, like down to the frame of our car, and we couldn't get it out. And I just started freaking out. What are we going to do? Get me out of here. How are we going to get out of here? Oh my God. So one of the people who was from Berkeley and came along and he was helping us, and they got a bulldozer to come get us and all this stuff. And he looked at me like, girlfriend, you need to calm down. You know, this is Greenfield time. Get it together. And I quickly learned to let things go. Like, it doesn't matter, you know, just start hiking or just hang out with your friends. It doesn't matter. And I think I have let go of my uptight. That was a hard lesson for me. I'm still a little uptight. I'm kind of high maintenance, but that taught me a lot about whatever, you know.
You're listening to Promise of Paradise, Back to the Land, Oral Histories of Mendocino County. We're hearing from Lynn Meadows from Ukiah. I'm Kate Magruder. I asked Lynn how the influx in the late 60s and 70s of so many back-to-the-landers like her, how that impacted the county.
I think it was probably shocking at first for the ranchers and people. It was a different era before we came, and then all of a sudden all these hippies came, and we're all walking around, you know, with our long hair and our boots, our rain boots on and stuff. But we banded together early on when with the Class K, and we had to work together and meet and come out of the hills and become political. And we had an influence, and some people even got elected into county jobs. And then we started KZYX. And there's a power here that we have as community. We've created it. I think it's been amazing and huge. I think we've had a huge influence. I mean, between the co-op and organic food being available and the organic farms that have come up around here. There's always the pot thing too. That's been huge. And the businesses that have grown out of it. Yeah, I think we've had a huge influence on the community. It's a beautiful community.
Can you tell me a little bit about Class K?
Well, when we came, we were just back to the landers who were just going out in the middle of nowhere and just building any old thing we felt like building. And we weren't thinking about, oh, we're going to be here for 100 years and these buildings better stand up in a storm or they might crush you and stuff like that. And so, or the, you know, your septic system should be up to code. And we had our own kind of deal going here. And then there's all about community. I mean, if you talk about community and you don't have a good septic system, there's somebody down below you that maybe you ought to think about. So I think there was this mixed bag of, we got noticed by the county, and then they were red tagging the houses, and everybody was freaking out because they were going to have to tear down their house or get it inspected and have it up to code, and no one could afford to be up to code. And it was a big revolution, basically. So we fought for owner builders to be able to create their own spaces. And I think a compromise, which was valuable. I mean, the whole public health issue, since I'm a medical person, it was like, oh yeah, really, that is a good idea. So I think that I'm thankful for Class K that we can be creative, but at the same time we should be responsible. And one person's house did fall down, so he didn't brace it right, and it was a big house and it just went down. So I think that we learned that there's a value to being part of a society, working together that way. One time Bob fell off a roof while he was working. He's a contractor. And he broke his arm and had an external fixator, and it was in the fall, and he couldn't do anything or go anywhere, and we were laid up at our house. And people on Greenfield came and cut all our firewood and did the things that we needed to get done that we couldn't do. And that's the story of Greenfield. Whenever anybody needs anything, like someone needed some neck surgery one time and we had a benefit at the ranch house and raised money to help with expenses for that. And that's the great thing about living in a community that's an intentional community like Greenfield. We have 500 acres of common land that we all own together that we have to watch out for. So we've been having to work together through all our problems all these years, but we're still functioning. And it was started as an ecological community. So we're based in organic gardening and no hunting. And so it's a peaceful place, a safe place for kids. And I just wanted to say that I'm really thankful that I'm part of an intentional community that's lasted all this time too. I think one of our secrets is that it's not a religious community. Everybody can have their own way, and you own your own land. So if you get a divorce, it doesn't end the community, you know? So we've been able to survive.
Tell me more about how it was intentional. How did you manage as a diverse group of people? How did you make your way through all the decisions and the challenges that would come up over the decade?
Well, we have bylaws and deed restrictions that people had to agree with when they bought in, and that's no division less than 40 acres, no mobile homes, no pesticides, no hunting, dogs have to be on a leash. And so we had a lot of rules that were in existence, but there were some problems. We've had our problems. There was a lawsuit. We had to get it together and improve the way we run our board. And there's been some pain, but we've grown through it. And people step up to the plate to work with the board. We have 25 miles of roads that we have to maintain, and we have to pay to keep the roads up and to keep the ranch house going. And people continue to pay that and continue to work together. And it hasn't been easy at times, but the basis is there of people agreeing that when they come there, that's what they came for.
And are there second generation people who are living on the ranch now and new people coming to the ranch now?
There's second and third generation people on the ranch, and every house is full, and it's extremely rare that anything comes up for sale. So it's very stable community, and it's the same original people almost. There's about 150 people on the ranch. There's 90 parcels, and it changes a little bit, but not very fast and not very many. And most people, they pass it down in their family and keep it in the family.
And is there an experience that is emblematic for you of what being on the land, what being there on the ranch and living the life that you've lived, that sums it up, like you can almost taste it?
I think the most enduring part of living on the land, living in nature, for me, is going back to wanting to be in that meadow. And I'm a very high energy, hardworking person. The work I do is very intense. I worked in the ER for 20 years and the hospital, and I get really wound up. And the meadow is what I do is I stare at it. I have this position that I get in that I've always counted on for the Mother Earth, to the vibes that come out of the earth toward me. And I focus on that and I become in that rhythm of the earth, and it helps me calm my soul and my heart and to rejuvenate myself. And now I sit on my porch and I listen to the birds and the wind. I try to do it as often as I can. It's so rejuvenating for me. And I find myself now, because I'm working harder now than I've ever worked in my life, that I'm yearning for more time on the land. And I hope that I live long enough to really delve into the nature of it. And we just bought the land next door to ours, and we had never developed it. So we've made it into a campsite we're not going to develop. And I go over there almost every day and just sit on the edge and stare out at nature. And I feel like I'm camping in the wilderness. And that's the enduring part of it for me. Yeah.
You've been listening to Promise of Paradise, Back to the Land, Oral Histories of Mendocino County. We just heard from Lynn Meadows. You can hear short excerpts of this program on Thursdays during Morning Edition and longer episodes Thursday afternoon at 3:30. Archives of the program, along with photos, are available at kzyx.org and the Promise of Paradise Facebook page. Promise of Paradise is supported by the National Endowment for the Humanities, California Humanities, the Arts Council of Mendocino County, the Judy Pruden Historical Preservation Fund of the Community Foundation of Mendocino County, Story Center, the Mendocino Institute, and Grace Hudson Museum.
There's something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear.